You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Brand Now, How to Stand Out in a Crowded, Distracted World. Many former On Brand guests are already raving about Brand Now. Jay Baer calls it the quintessential guide to modern branding. Stacey Grissom of BarkBox says Brand Now provides practical tools and a helpful framework for building a brand both online and off. Learn more, get special extras and additional resources at brandnowbook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Justin Wartell. With more than 10 years building hardworking brands, Justin is the why do we do it person, asking questions that encourage clients to think differently about how brands are built and managed. Justin's expertise is in insights, analytics, strategy, and experience, and he's done extensive work around the world in mapping experience journeys. He spends most of his time helping clients' brands to work harder while leading key practice areas at Monocle. Justin's experience is deep in healthcare, but goes beyond. Brands he's helped include Northwell Health, UC Health, the Denver Broncos, Adventist Health, FedEx, Partners Healthcare, Sherwin-Williams, Massachusetts General Hospital, OneMaine Financial, the New England Journal of Medicine, Quiznos, and Tenet Healthcare. Prior to Monocle, Justin led Interbrand's retail and consumer branding business, the second largest office in Interbrand's global network. Justin, welcome to On Brand.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
I love the why do we do that person? Why is one of those questions that you can get lost on? It's such a big one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think especially when you look at some of the industries in which we at Monocle operate, some of the harder working B2B type of industries, oftentimes we find that clients do things, as you probably experience as well, just because it's always been done that way. And we pride ourselves on trying to challenge some of those expectations and some of that conventional, I'm putting that in quotes here, wisdom.
So talk a little bit more about some of those harder brands, because whether it's B2B, regulated industries like healthcare, it seems like clients, brand builders from those types of organizations, I mean this in a kind way, that they show up with a lot of baggage. They have all of this stuff that makes their industry so challenging. How do you unpack all of that baggage?
Yeah, I think let's even fill up the baggage a little more before we figure out how to fix it. And that's that oftentimes they're operating within organizations where brand is relegated to the sidelines. It's not part of a typical discussion in, you know, leadership teams, executive meetings, et cetera. So you add to the complicated industry, the challenge of the baggage that they bring to the table, and the fact that they're trying to build something that oftentimes is not terribly well respected. So when you get to what you were describing, how do you start to unpack those bags? I think we spend as much time as you probably do as well, educating around the potential of brand and the power of brand as we do solving specific brand problems. I think we view ourselves not just as strategists or storytellers, but also educators as it comes to an understanding of brand and its ability to not just look great, but to drive the business and to be meaningfully connected to business objectives.
So what are the first steps? We're really going to take that baggage metaphor to the extreme. We've unpacked it. We've talked about filling it up further. But how do you start the work when it is you know, boy, the industry's hard enough, but you raise the great point of brand itself is such a squishy thing that's often sitting somewhere else, has trouble making it to the right levels in the organization to really be leveraged. Those are big things for an outside agency partner to come in and say, here's what we need to do.
Yeah, I think it starts from our perspective with an understanding of where clients are on that spectrum. If you think about it, brand builders aren't all wired or built the same way. They don't think about or approach the world in the same way. And oftentimes they're shaped by the cultures and the structures in which they're operating. So our first objective when we're starting to get to know a client and how we might help them to build their brand is to understand where they are on that sophistication spectrum or that understanding spectrum and determine how much of our initial work has to be educating or alternatively, how much can be focused really on what you might think about as the task at hand, which is really getting to work from an understanding of their business, their industry, their brand perspective.
Pun intended, a sophistication spectrum sounds complex. is that anything that you can talk us through in a basic sense in terms of, if it's a spectrum, what the ends are, for anyone listening out there that might be wondering where they fall on such a spectrum?
Yeah, I think so. The complexity is not intended. I think it comes down to a handful of pretty simple questions. Do organizations use the B word in their regular vernacular? We've encountered places where you can't say brand out loud without ruffling. So it could be an executive or a business unit leader's feathers. So I think one of the diagnostics that would help you look at either end of that spectrum is, do we say brand out loud? Do we have a clearly defined understanding of brands? And even before you get to what is that organization's brand or what are the various manifestations that we might be helping to distill or codify, do we even understand what brand is and share a common viewpoint around the role that brand plays in a very human way expressing an organization's business strategy? And then taking that a step further, is there consistency or clarity across all types of levels, responsibilities within the organization of what the enterprise's brand stands for? So you start to think about how to determine where you live on that spectrum. Do you talk about brand? Do you have a shared definition of what brand is? And do you also share a common vernacular around what your actual brand stands for? Those are some of the things that we try to tease out early on to really understand where the organization falls in and how we can adapt our approach and our style and the amount of education that we might have to bring to the table in order to help an organization get on a shared starting point for effectively doing any brand building.
Well, I like that the first one is, do organizations use the B word? And I had to stifle a laugh at it being called the B word, which, you know, with little kids, you know, you talk about, you know, different forms of profanity as the B word and such. And it occurred to me, and if you have to ask what the B word is or what you're talking about, then that's probably also fairly revealing on that spectrum as well. I like your point on clarity across the organization. I think that is so key because sometimes there is an established definition of branding and even the organization's brand, but it doesn't make it out of the rung on the org chart where that individual sits. What are some strategies for fostering clarity across the organization when it comes to brand?
I think our playbook relative to helping brand builders instill an understanding of brand and a consistent ability to integrate brand into the thinking of others has to first be about bringing folks to the table early in any brand change process. I think so often brand builders, brand leaders from across the organization start to craft these ideas around the brand and its differentiating characteristics and how it translates to the experience they're doing so in isolation, often resulting in a feeling that what's coming from the marketing organization or the brand organization is the latest flavor of the day. Here's just the newest idea. And it doesn't give the business credibility or the long-term viability of brand enough teeth for folks across the enterprise. And I think across all brands and with brand builders that we're collaborating with, we encourage bringing diverse stakeholders and a cross section of the organization to the table sooner rather than later so that they can be a part of what's happening, so they can understand and provide input and feel connected to the process. They typically very quickly flip their orientation to questioning the reason this work is happening to being advocates and storytellers and trainers around the brand for others. So I think that the first element is making sure that you bring folks to the table from a process standpoint sooner. Another key element I think that is at least on our minds is the importance of education as a long-term commitment. Oftentimes, we think about brand building and you get to the point where you have some of those most tangible assets, a positioning, a brand architecture, a name, maybe a visual identity, a new or refreshed logo. And we're in a situation where everybody kind of brushes off their hands and says, wow, that was great. That was a lot of hard work. And now we're near the end. We often talk about the idea that that's actually where all the hard work begins. And the strength and success of any brand program, whether it's about a positioning or it's a change in identity or it's a doubling down on a commitment to creating experience, it has to flow through and be delivered by the people that are interacting with current and potential customers every single day. And if we don't have the systems and the tools in place to educate people and engage people on those, on what the brand is and how it should impact their behavior, we find a situation where there's just not enough of an ongoing kind of drip toward what the brand's all about. And then you can't get excited about it. You can't maintain that momentum that's critical to helping people deliver it every single day.
So when you talk about brand education, I feel like that could mean a lot of different things. What are, you know, short of, I'm sure that when we're saying that here, that most people are sitting there and thinking, oh yeah, the person comes up and does the brand deck for people at a brown bag lunch. What Yep. does some of that ongoing brand education look like? The hard work, like you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a great point because you're only scratching the surface when you're thinking about that brand deck over the lunch and learn session,
right,
where people are rolling their eyes and thinking, well, here's the new story I have to tell, or that they're asking me to tell, that as soon as I walk out of this room, I'm going to get back to my new job. The most important idea from our perspective is to reframe why brand education is necessary. And we boil it down to a very simple idea that's always been, you know, it's something that my mother can understand and about what I do, which is really an important criteria for me. Can I express that? And she goes, oh, yeah, I understand what you're talking about. And it's that the brand from an education standpoint has to help people to understand what they should do differently tomorrow than they're doing today. And so it's very specifically around the do. And to your question, from an education standpoint, you got to first start with that the education has to be two way. It's not just about telling a story over a brown bag lunch. It's not just about putting a document out there and asking people to acknowledge it. You have to both share information, but collect information. When people have questions, we need to have a mechanism to field those questions, to get answers to those questions, to have a dialogue. Because in most organizations, if one person's asking the question, then six others are probably doing that as well. And we can disseminate and make more efficient and effective the reach of brand education. The other piece is that it has to be sustained over the long term. We have to keep momentum that it doesn't feel like this is just one session where the CEO showed up and told a beautiful story with a video that got people excited, but instead it starts to integrate itself into more frequent situations where employees are learning about what it means to deliver the brand and deliver behaviors. it's tangential to education, but it gets down to the level of detail around rewriting job descriptions and rethinking talent management efforts so that you ensure that every aspect of delivering the brand, the sense of the education that we're providing, ties to the specific behaviors that we're encouraging, or alternatively, the behaviors that we're asking people not to deliver when they're interacting with not only their external audiences, customers, potential customers, but also internally, so that those internal interpersonal interactions are on brand as well.
So in an effort to make this conversation even more vast, what about experience, one of your areas of expertise? That's, you know, none of these things are easy checklist items, and certainly not experience, which everyone nods along with. Experience is so important. But how do you get your arms around brand experience?
I think from my perspective, the first element of understanding and internalizing this an experience orientation is to ensure that we're all starting with a shared definition. And at least in my mind, to think about what experience means, it's about the residue that brands leave with people when the product experience, the service experience, the interpersonal interaction is gone. One of the most direct examples that we often use is the notion of you can go buy laundry detergent at Walmart, you can go buy laundry detergent at Target, and you can go buy laundry detergent at Whole Foods. And after you walk out of the store, you've accomplished the functional element of getting that laundry detergent, but each of those experiences, in this case, a physical retail experience, but the same concept applies online if you're purchasing in that channel. But the thing that's left over after you have that product is very different depending on where you walked in. And I think that residual feeling is how we think about experience. What do I want to leave people with once they're done with their interaction with me? The thing that has longevity after the direct interaction that we've had. I think if we can, that's at least my definition, but I think just generally the starting point to start to wrap your arms around something as complex as experience is to ensure that we have a shared definition. I'd be interested from your perspective, talking to such a diversity of brand-centric thinkers, how has it informed your view of what experience is or your definition of it?
You heard it a little bit in me asking the question, just the idea of this vastness, that there is nothing that's, it's not possible, I don't think, to think too big when you're talking about brand experience, to think about everything leading up to, that is a part of, and that is after the fact. As someone's, you know, walking out of the Whole Foods, there's or Target or Walmart, there's still pieces that are informing that. Or if there's not pieces, there are the absence of touch points that are sending a different message as well. So it seems to really reinvent the canvas that we build brands on.
Yeah, I think that's the canvas analogy is a really intriguing one, and one that we've toyed with before, because if you think about it, it's also a way to start to address the concept of, or the role of, digital in the experience. I think from our point of view, you have the notion that this portfolio of digital touch points and interactions happening in an online environment and a social environment, that's just a broader set of colors on the palette that can be used to create that experience on the piece of canvas, or that composition, so to speak. And I think where our minds start to go, and it comes out of a learning from some of the journey mapping work that our team did at FedEx, was around understanding that brand doesn't necessarily have to play a role at every single step in the journey or touch point in the experience. In fact, there's certain places where our audiences are specifically not giving us permission for brand to play a role there. And I think that's an important consideration as brand builders and brand leaders are thinking about prioritizing where they take action and trying to wrestle down this diversity of touch points they're operating with. Brand doesn't necessarily have to play a role everywhere. In fact, some people don't want to see some of the elements of your brand delivered at certain touch points. Instead, they just need it to deliver a functional benefit or a clear emotional benefit that might be directly tied to your brand, but it might not be as well. And I think there's some potential in that to help deconstruct the complexity and make it more accessible, where you don't have to own and be branded at every single step in your experience.
I think that's another key point in really what's been a lot of great defining that you've done over the course of this episode, because you know all of this based on someone's miscategorization of branding as a marketing or even more tactically a design function, that's where you fall into the trap that you just mentioned, that you're going to see the branding. But when your brand is about something bigger, it might not mean you've got, you know, the colors and art and everything. It might just be delivery of some aspect of the experience that in and of itself is very on brand.
Yeah, I think you're right on with that. And you start to think about then, as brand builders, you have a series of tools that you can use that color palette to paint with. And from our perspective, brand can come through in not just those visual elements, but the verbal elements, the interpersonal and behavioral elements. And sometimes you need to use those branded tools and sometimes you don't. And I think that helping to always put yourself in the shoes of those audiences you're hoping to serve, whether it be that consumer audience or your in B2B businesses, a different kind of customer audience with a different mindset. But if you put yourself in his or her shoes and understand the decision making that's taking place, it can help simplify the world and keep you focused on the things that will truly matter to that person that you're trying either to cause to choose you or to that you hope to satisfy or that you hope to turn into an advocate for your brand as opposed to an alternative.
So in looking at experience and looking at some of the brands in your bio, beyond some of the more complex B2B brands in there, you also have the Denver Broncos. And we've spoken with the chief marketing officer for the Minnesota Vikings here on the podcast before. And I think a sports brand, that's something that's taking experience to a whole nother level as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When you have those punctuated moments of tens of thousands of people screaming for, you know, the outcome that they all desire, it can be a very different experience. But it's really important, and I'm sure that from a Viking standpoint, you all talked about this as well. What's so intriguing about sports brands is that most of the fanaticism that exists, most of the brand loyalty and advocacy has nothing to do with the event itself. The lion's share of those interactions, and especially the more emotional ones, are happening for people that have never entered the stadium or have never had a direct interaction with the team.
No, that's Steve LaCroix, their chief marketing officer. When he was on the podcast, he said those exact words, is that, you know, on one hand, you have this very, really a small number of very intense brand experiences in person. But beyond that, the number of fans that you have that he said exactly what you just said, that that never enter the stadium is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. And then as a brand builder in that context, how do you propel energy around it? I think for us working with the Broncos, what we were helping to reframe is the whole notion of what brand meant for the organization. To think of them not as a brand that is focused on sports or delivers sports-related experiences, but as a brand that creates community and connects people, brings them together, beats down barriers that often in community interactions are walls that separate people. Their brand is a grand unifier within the Denver and Front Range community. And what we were trying to help unlock was the confidence and perspective of delivering that community first orientation, as opposed to what they're stereotypically associated with, which is the game of football.
That's fascinating. I love the community first orientation too. You know, in looking at that, I have to think, you know, there are, you talk about doubling down on healthcare and that you have a deep experience there. But then with the diversity of brands, I tell you, as much as I enjoy going really deep on a particular type of brand, I love hearing about, and I would imagine that you love working with a diversity of brands as well. When you see how hospital and healthcare brands versus the Broncos and the Quiznos, that there's something behind that that I would imagine helps you see the bigger picture of what a brand is and why we connect with them.
Yeah, I think the appeal personally is the diversity and the challenges from a business perspective that these various industries are facing. And I've always been excited about kind of tackling something new. I appreciate and respect folks that can work on the client side and really own a particular product or a brand or an experience and deliver it relentlessly. I don't think my mind works that way. I'm intrigued and excited by the diversity of challenges that we find. I think what also sets up the importance of having that perspective from such a diversity of industries is that we can bring best practices from, you know, retail and consumer packaged goods to healthcare, from sports branding to how a sandwich shop thinks about the role that they play in people's lives, to a logistics company relentlessly oriented on functional delivery, but being able to connect with the emotional experience that an organization like healthcare can, or an industry like healthcare can inspire. So it's some of that intermixing that's really exciting for me. But I think the bigger idea that connects it all together, the consistency or the unity of brands and branding, is that it's simply a manifestation of what an organization is trying to accomplish. It's the most human interpretation of its business strategy. And I think when we can define brand in that way and always ensure that we're tying it to business-specific objectives across each of these industries, it allows us to get to the real kind of meaty issues that many brands face, causing people to choose them more often, building stronger, more satisfaction-rich interactions, and turning them into advocates for the brand. That's really universal across industries, and it's the most inspiring piece of what brands can do for organizations, while also just elevating the prominence of brand and the credibility of brand for organizations and executive suites that don't always give it its due.
Amen. And speaking of what brands can do, as we start to wrap things up, what is a brand that has made you smile recently, Justin?
I think the most recent smile-inducing experience that I've had, you know, as a consultant who has the opportunity to go and spend a lot of time with clients, most of which are outside the state of Colorado, I spend a lot of time on airplanes. And I'm always looking for something interesting to bring back, whether it's for my wife or for my kids. And I was recently in London and was on my way out of town and came across a Lush cosmetics store. And deep in my history, and I'm halfway grateful we didn't get into it today, I was a cook and a caterer before I got into the branding business. So I've always had an appreciation for food. And it's still something that I spend a lot of time thinking about, mostly when I'm not doing this job. But one of the most amazing parts of Lush, if you've been to the store, is the way that they present these beautifully handmade cosmetics, none of which I use myself, but I know that they're appreciated by the ladies in my house. And there's an immediate appeal there. It's almost cosmetics as food. But that part of it was actually not the most smile-inducing. I was in a relative rush, headed to the airport. came in and started to interact. I had my suitcase with me, of course. So immediately one of the salespeople expressed, "Oh, you must be buying something to take home to your significant other." And so they pegged me right there. And I had the most incredible interpersonal interaction. This woman was able to ask the most interesting questions about what I was looking for, about my wife, helped me to, pick this product, not this, continued to cause me to fill that bag. I mean, so she was incredibly effective from a pure sales standpoint. But I can't remember coming away from a brand experience beaming the way that I did. And the product wasn't even for me. And it was the way that she brought to life all aspects of the Lush personality and experience, a little bit of a challenger mentality, an incredible playfulness and wit. There was a layer that was just British humor that played into it as well. But it was a wonderful smile inducing experience, and one that I like to talk about as the epitome of being able to educate and engage your staff in delivering experiences that people remember and talk about. I don't think I stopped talking about Lush for 3 months after that trip.
That is amazing. A fun story and certainly a great brand. Love Lush. There is something, it makes me feel a little strange to say, there is something edible about how the brand is packaged. It is all very tasty. And I know I'm a grown up. I know that I'm not supposed to want to eat the soap and the cosmetics, but it does look, it is very enticing. So wonderful, wonderful smile. So Justin, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
To learn a little bit more about us here at Monogle, you can check us out at monogle.com. And we'd be happy to talk about all brand type challenges, both big and small.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Justin, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you, Nick. We appreciate the opportunity. It was great to chat with you.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Tyler Adams of Seattle, Washington, gave us a shout out for our episode featuring Denise Lee Yan. Tyler, thanks for listening. And a reminder, if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Thanks again to our sponsor, 2020, your source for on-brand photography for your brand. Get 5 photos with 2020's 1-week free trial at 2020.com/onbrand. That's the word 20, then the number 20, .com/onbrand. On Brand is a production of Brand Driven Digital, helping complex organizations simplify their branding and marketing to unlock growth. More, including the links we discussed on this podcast, at branddrivendigital.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.